Now, do you know your life expectancy? What's the number that pops into your head? We know the average life expectancy has been going up for the most part for decades. It's already much higher probably than whenever you were born. And our next guest says thanks to cutting-edge medical and technological advances, it's likely we're all going to live a lot longer in the future. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about some of the latest research in longevity? Living longer and living healthier along the way, our guest says. Is there a medical development that you look back on and say, yeah, that's helped me live a lot longer, or someone in my family? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you want to live to 150? Does that sound like a good idea? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Dr. Michael Roizen is Emeritus Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic and a professor at the Cleveland Clinic Lerner College of Medicine at Case Western Reserve University. His books include What to Eat When and Age Proof. He's co-author of the new book, The Great Age Reboot, Cracking the Longevity Code for a Younger Tomorrow. Dr. Roizen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Rob, it's a privilege to join you. Thank you very much.
Before we dig into some of the specific developments, you and your co-authors are saying we're really on the verge of something big when it comes to longevity. How much could things change in the next 50 years or so?
Well, in the next 10 years, we expect that life expectancy will increase by about 30 years with an 80% probability. Let me go back a little bit. We've increased life expectancy, that is sanitation, public health, and the medical community, medical science community, has gone from about 42 or 43 in 1890 to about 78 now. And we expect with at least an 80% probability, because there are what we call 14 shots on goal, 14 hot areas of exponentially increasing research into the basic mechanism of aging that have been going on and that have transformed, each has transformed at least two animal species. We expect that a 30-year increase in life expectancy will be probable. In 1998, when Real Age came out, when we published Real Age, we said that 60 was likely to be the new 40. It has happened. We're now saying that 90 is likely to be the new 40. That is, you won't just be living longer, you'll be living younger.
One thing I want to get into at the outset here is people might hear the technologies you're talking about and think, great, I don't need to take care of myself. Medical science is going to fix whatever goes wrong with me, you know, in the next 20 or 30 years or whatever. That is exactly the opposite of what you're encouraging people to think. Can you tell us how you're hoping this influences our behavior today?
That's exactly right, because although sometime in the future, maybe by 2050, you'll go in a car wash as a 90-year-old at one end and come out a 40-year-old at the other end. But for the foreseeable future, it's organ system by organ system, which means that in order to enjoy this longevity, the changes that are happening, that we've got to keep ourselves as young as possible so that the organs don't get what you would call structural change that's irreparable before the change happens that's allowing us to reboot them to a younger organ. And so the point is we've got to do everything we can. In fact, it's kind of our responsibility to society to do everything we can, as well as to ourselves, to keep everything as young as possible, especially your brain and nervous system, because that's the one we expect to be the hardest to reboot.
Talking to Dr. Michael Roizen about his new book, The Great Age Reboot, Cracking the Longevity Code for a Younger Tomorrow. You can join in with your thoughts, your reactions to what you're hearing, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. All right, Dr. Roizen, let's look at what might be in the works today. Let's start off with the idea of, a 3D printer. We've seen those, but maybe 3D printers that can give us replacement organs?
Yeah, in fact, one of the joys of this, of being in the field that I'm in, that is getting to follow longevity, is they had a contest last year. It was an open contest for the last 5 years, who would be the first to be able to print a viable, functioning in all three areas liver. And Team Winston at Winston-Salem University, at Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, won that last year. The liver is a complex organ. It both produces proteins, it excretes compounds, including drugs. It has bile ducts as well as arteries and veins. And it's incredibly important in synthesis, in excretion, and in metabolism. And they, working with human stem cells, working with living stem cells from people's bone marrow, were able to reproduce a human liver. Now, we already know we can produce bones, we can produce jaws, we can even produce tracheas, but this was a breakthrough in producing a liver, which is it's maybe the third or fourth most complex organ in the human body.
How far are we from, that proof of concept, I guess, to, we need a transplant of a complex organ like a liver, and we don't need a donor. We can grow one, maybe using some of our own biology.
So whether we get the breakthrough in this area or in one of the others, we expect that every one of these 14 areas has done this in at least two animal species. So they've done the liver transplant in pigs and in mice. Now it is, so you're saying, how long before it's ongoing. It'll be ongoing in humans experimentally. And we expect within 10 years, each of these areas will have a breakthrough into humans, that at least one of them will succeed. So my favorite, of course, is, and my co-author Albert Ratner's favorite, is the regressing of white fat to what we call mother fat, pluripotent fat, and then its transformation into brown fat and eliminating obesity and all the diseases such as arthritis and type 2 diabetes and the other diseases that go along with it. What do we mean? So when you're young, when you're a newborn, you have brown fat. It surrounds your key organs and keeps them warm when your mom can't swaddle you or doesn't have the time to swaddle you at all times to keep you warm. But it comes from what we call mother fat or pluripotent fat. In three species, and I'll tell you the largest one was sheep, and we'll tell you why in a second, they regressed the white fat that we have around our intestines and that hangs off our belly and that causes inflammation in us to mother fat, and then turned it into brown fat and eliminated obesity. The largest animal was sheep. Why did they do it in sheep at Clemson? Well, they did it there because it turns out sheep can't stop eating either, and they develop non-alcoholic fatty liver disease just like humans, and die and stop being able to produce wool, so that the sheep farmers wanted that to see if they could do that. And so that's been done in at least sheep experimentally. So these are some of the changes. Now you'd say, are there inexpensive ones? And yes, as well as some of those that are more designed, such as gene therapy, and more specific and expensive. We just had an approval of gene therapy for beta thalassemia and sickle cell disease in the United States, a expensive therapy. It uses relatively inexpensive parts, if you will, drugs, but the drug company charges a lot because of the regulatory approval process and because of their profit motive. But in fact, some of these are already approved drugs that are very inexpensive.
Bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Elizabeth is with us in Madison. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm all for having people be healthy, but I really don't understand the increased longevity piece, because we already have a lack of medical health workers, the lack of CNAs and other people in nursing homes and in the medical field. We have older people who are lonely, and I'm just not understanding increasing, you know, till age 90 or beyond when there's already not enough help for people.
Elizabeth, thanks for the call. Great questions. And Dr. Royzen, you and your co-authors talk about some of the social and economic adaptations this increase in longevity would require.
Right. I think her name was Elizabeth, the caller, and I apologize
Elizabeth,
if I missed the name. But Elizabeth, so take a 90-year-old of now isn't going to be the 90-year-old of 10 years from now. That's why longevity will be a huge disruptor. And that's really why we wrote the book, so that people can plan for it. Because a 90-year-old will function like the 40-year-old of today. That's with at least an 80% probability. And what do we mean by that? Well, instead of work life being from 20 or 25 to 65, if you retire at 65 and live to 115, you're not going to want to do that because you're going to do nothing for 50 years. So you're going to expand work life from 25 to 65 to from 25 to maybe 90 or 95. And that's going to be productive work life. Think of the 95-year-old as a 55-year-old or a 60-year-old today. That's what it's going to be like. And yes, you're absolutely right. We don't have enough healthcare workers and care accessibility for the elderly now. But this change, just like we've jumped over, I mean, the chip was the last disruptor about 60 years ago. And it's improved our lives in substantial ways. We now have more power in our phones than we did for all of IBM 360 computers that took rooms of chips, if you will, in the past. Well, that same power is going to occur in medicine, we believe, and longevity will be the next disruptor. And it will make, if we plan for it right, and I can tell you already, Australia, Singapore, and Denmark are planning for it fiscally correctly. If we do that as well as they do it, and that's really why we wrote the book, to get that discussion going. If we plan for it as well as they did it, it will cause an enormous thriving in, if you will, Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, because we'll be able to have much better access, because we won't be dealing with many of the chronic diseases at any place near as early as we have to deal with them now. Just imagine eliminating obesity and the consequences. Most arthritis is due to obesity, and it's in and the inflammation causes. Most type 2 diabetes is due to that. A lot of cardiovascular disease and cancer and dementia are due to that. Well, imagine eliminating that, Elizabeth, and that's what you've got, and that's why it really does take a mind shift and an emotional change to understand how big this disruptor is likely to be.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Dr. Michael Royzen, Emeritus Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic. His new book is The Great Age Reboot, Cracking the Longevity Code for a Younger Tomorrow. You can join in with your questions, your thoughts, your reactions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Dr. Michael Royzen, Emeritus Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic, looking at his new book, The Great Age Reboot, Cracking the Longevity Code for a Younger Tomorrow. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to our callers. Jeanette is with us in Sparta. Jeanette, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I was just listening to it and kind of thinking about kind of how our country operates in terms of, you know, public institutions like universities coming up with these really great technologies, and then once they get passed off to the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry, they end up, you know, prices skyrocket, and the average person can't afford them. So I'm wondering what your guest
interesting
feels about that.
Jeanette, thanks for the call. Dr. Royzen, today's economic disparities when it comes to health, will they just be replicated with these new longevity technologies?
You know, the hope is not, but the fear is yes. And that's why again, why we wrote the book, to talk about the policies. And so the first third of the book is on the these 14 areas of research. The next third is on the policies and economics of it. And the last third is what you can do to prepare for it, both financially and physically, that is, in your medical care. But some of these are very cheap. Let me give you two examples. At the Gladstone, I'll give you three examples because I can't resist. At the Gladstone in San Francisco, they looked at every drug already approved by the FDA and looked at their ability to block the functioning of the APOE4 gene, which is known to increase dementia by about threefold. They found that Bumetamide, which is a $4 a month water pill, already approved now, $4 a month, it's generic, won't go back, it won't become non-generic. So $4 a month, and it reversed 70% of the functioning of that gene, so that in fact, when they looked at people taking that water pill in a 12 million person database, compared to people taking other water pills, Bumex, decreased the incidence of dementia 70%. That now is undergoing, under NIH's auspices, a very, if you will, not a private drug company, a randomized controlled trial to look, does it do it in a prospective group? At the Cleveland Clinic, they did the same, but looked at the difference in protein attachment of tau and amyloid with every approved drug. Again, they looked at 1,563 drugs and found that Viagra, women use Viagra for pulmonary hypertension, men for erectile dysfunction. They found that Viagra decreased the attachment and decreased in a 15 million person database. 69% it decreased dementia rates. That's now undergoing, again, a randomized controlled trial under NIH auspices. And the two together, bumetamide and Viagra, are undergoing it together. Those are both generic drugs, so they should be very inexpensive in the future. Now, let me give you one more. And my favorite example of all, I told you, my co-author, Mr. Ratner, Albert Ratner's favorite, which was, of course, the transformation of white fat to brown fat. But my favorite is actually in the AMBAR studies, AMBAR, which was a plasma exchange. Now, we do plasma exchange donation of plasma, and we pay college students and graduate students, et cetera, to do it. So it's not very expensive. You take away the plasma, you wash the red cells, give those back, and you replace the plasma with salt water, saline. Doing that in patients with early Alzheimer's disease reversed this in a randomized controlled trial of around 300 people, what we call phase 2B3A study, sponsored by a foundation. Now, the technology to do this is not solely owned by any one company, and they're now, but that foundation is now sponsoring a 3,000, and by the way, it was done at six places worldwide, two in Spain, two in Chile, and the University of Pittsburgh and Cleveland Clinic in the United States. It's now being done in 100 different sites for 3,000 patients, and within 2 or 3 years, we'll know if this is a viable technique for preventing dementia. And by the way, when it was used in animal models, it also prevented skin aging. It reversed the aging of muscle and pancreas, and even, if you will, other cardiovascular system organs. And this stemmed from the young blood to old animals made the old animal young. Well, it wasn't that it was the young blood to the old animal. It was the old animal getting rid of its old proteins. And this is thought that it relates to protein misformation or malformation in that is still lingering in plasma and us not having young proteins or normal signaling proteins in our blood. So we'll know within 3 years whether that, and that's really cheap. And the good news is they're competitors in the field. And so it shouldn't be very expensive at all for those. And there, if you look at the 14 areas, at least 7 of them are very inexpensive and should be able to be, have competitors enough that they will be and stay inexpensive.
And Dr. Roizen, just in our last half a minute or so, leave us with one piece of health advice to protect ourselves until these things come online.
You're a genetic engineer. So when you exercise and stress a muscle, it turns on a gene that produces a risin that goes to the blood-brain barrier and increases the size of your hippocampus, your memory center in your brain. So by you speed of processing games, are the one game, crossword puzzles a little bit, executive a little bit, but speed of processing games and speed of exercise, stressing muscles, are two very important things for your brain.
Dr. Roizen, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank the
questioners.
That's Dr. Michael Roizen, Emeritus Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic, professor at the Cleveland Clinic Lerner College of Medicine at Case Western Reserve University. We've been talking about his new book, The Great Age Reboot, Cracking the Longevity Code for a Younger Tomorrow.